Police with DNA evidence are finding larger and larger DNA repositories to seek a match. Not all DNA available to law enforcement in criminal cases, it turns out, is confined to national law enforcement databases. Through a relatively unregulated practice called familial searches, law enforcement can now look for matches that might tag a close relative of someone. They can identify suspects whose relatives might have submitted DNA willingly to track their ancestry or to get information on their health, and maybe have expected some privacy when they gave their DNA. Generally, such information is only publicly searchable if it remains anonymous. But law enforcement can issue a subpoena for such personal information if they think they can identify a suspect who might be a close relative. In most cases, there is very little you can do about it. Erin Murphy is a professor of law at NYU and an expert in DNA forensics. She's the author of Inside the Cell, The Dark Side of Forensic DNA. Erin, thanks for joining us.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Inside the Cell, very clever. Very, very clever there. I like that. Let me admire that right off the front. So if an individual gives DNA for the purpose of finding out who your ancestors are, do they have an expectation of privacy under any circumstances?
Well, I suppose there's two ways to answer that. In the ordinary sense, on the street, probably. They probably think when I send my DNA sample in, it's only going to be used for this limited purpose. Legally, no. They've shared their DNA or their genetic information with another person, and that person then can share it with others or can be forced by court order to hand over information.
Let's deconstruct this. Identify a suspect who might be a close relative. Let's say the president of some company has a really bad brother, okay? Mm-hmm. And the bad brother is known to be like a bad guy, but he's a really smart bad guy because, of course, his brother is a CEO of a corporation, right? Mm-hmm. And there's no evidence. There's no evidence that he was a part of this crime, but there is some DNA evidence. But it doesn't – they don't have any matching DNA evidence of this guy. They don't have anything on him. Could they force the company that the brother works for to give up DNA that he might have given as a, in the course of a medical examination to match him to the family and thereby get closer to some sort of conviction?
Well, in that scenario, there's two things that don't quite fit the usual pattern. One thing that doesn't fit is the bad brother is, I think, the person who committed the crime here.
Right.
And if police suspect the bad brother, they can just go to court and say, we have all this reason to suspect the bad brother. Let's get a DNA sample from him. So forget the CEO brother. The other reason is that the bad brother, as I say, convicted felon, might be in a database already. So police can just go to the convicted felon database and try to match the DNA from the crime scene to someone there, see it's the bad brother, case closed. Family searching does something a little different. Family searching says, we have DNA from the crime scene. We threw it into the database of convicted felons or arrestees, and we didn't get a match. We got nothing back. The bad brother didn't match. But you know what? The bad brother was close to the crime scene evidence. It's not his DNA, but could be a relative of his. So now what we want to do is think about who's related to the bad brother, who's not in the database. Is there a CEO brother or someone else? And we can go through those people, these people who are, you know, haven't committed any crime, didn't have a reason to have to give their DNA to the database, and start investigating them and suspecting them.
Is that trolling? Is that throwing the net wide? Is that some sort of evidence gathering that is a little suspicious from a lawyer's perspective?
I think that there are legal arguments to make against that practice, but it's definitely – those are cutting-edge arguments. It's not the case that it's a clear-cut thing to do that's illegal, except in the two jurisdictions, D.C. and Maryland, that have expressly forbidden it by law. But many other jurisdictions have no laws about it. And in those places, literally at the lab level, you might have a lab director or the legal counsel for a county saying, you can do this because the law is silent and we're going to take the silence to mean permission.
If a DNA shows up at a crime scene and I've given my DNA in some of one of these ancestral DNA databases and they search it and it, you know, mine is a close match to someone who might be in this database, they talk to me and they go, well, do you have an alibi for this night? And I can completely say I was nowhere near this place. Can they then start interrogating my family members asking questions?
That's exactly the issue. So if you're a close match but no cigar, then they know it's not you. They're never going to bother with your alibi. What they will do is say, let's look at his Facebook feed and see who he seems to be related to because surnames, you know, go through families. Or let's look at other information that might be publicly available. Maybe if you've participated in Ancestry through genetic information, you've also been connecting family trees. They have these elaborate ways of putting family trees together. So let's look through the actual family tree that's been created for you and then further the investigation, either surreptitiously without alerting your relatives. We're looking at you, maybe collecting the tissue that your son or your father throws down in order to test it to see if it's a match to the evidence, or, you know, getting court orders or going more publicly.
All right, quickly. Are there potentials for false positives here that would be very worrisome to lawyers? And are there real life cases that suggest there needs to be new law here?
Yeah, I think there's absolutely an enormous potential for false positives, because when you look for these near misses, everybody knows you get a high rate of false positives. You know, there was a Colorado attempt to test 1,850 crime scene samples through this method. At the end of the day, they got six possible leads. So from 1,850, they got only even six possible things that could even be a lead. And it's unclear how many of those even will pan out. The investigation that's done, obviously, can be incredibly intrusive. So I'll give an example of one case recently using a public database, the Ancestry.com database. In that case, there was a murder in Idaho Falls, and there was DNA recovered from the crime scene. There was no match in the DNA databases, so the investigator had the idea to check in the Ancestry.com databases, these public databases, to see if there might be a match. They got a list of potential close matches, and one looked particularly close, and they thought that could be a brother, a father, a relative. Through that, they identified a young man who lived, the son of the person who had given his DNA through to Ancestry, who lived in Louisiana. The offense occurred in Idaho, but this young man had two sisters who went to school in Idaho. He had some family connections there. His name coincidentally matched the name that someone had given of a possible perpetrator. He matched the description of the perpetrator. He even made horror movies that were violent that sort of, you know, could suggest he has this disposition. And he was investigated. He was alerted to the investigation, so kind of lived under the shadow of, we think you might be a murder rapist, for a month. And it turned out through DNA testing that he did not, in fact, match that sample.
So a tool for law enforcement, but certainly some worries and questions for attorneys taking a look at DNA evidence. Aaron Murphy is NYU professor of law and an expert in DNA forensics, author of Inside the Cell, The Dark Side of Forensic DNA. Thanks so much, Aaron.
Thank you.